From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
There are so many lessons, but the one that I can honestly say is return every phone call and return every email, because you never know who is going to be the next best thing or who you can help, you know, in a certain way. Because there's a lot of people, especially young people, who have a misconception of what the music business is about. And there's a lot of dreams being sold, a lot of hope being sold, but no truth being told, you know. So if I could say anything, and then do your research, especially when you're an entertainer, you should have a working knowledge of everything that a manager does, everything that a CPA does, everything that a record company does. You should have a working knowledge of what mechanical royalties are. You should have a work, I'm not saying you represent those things, but you should have a working knowledge of them, so that in the event someone is not doing things to your liking, you would at least be able to express and to explain to them why you don't like those things, instead of them assuming that you're a temperamental artist.
Dr. Tracy Randall, PhD, entertainment attorney, Grammy-nominated songwriter, producer, record label owner, and gospel recording artist. Randall is the founder, president, and CEO of Original Man Entertainment Group, president and CEO of Lavish Records, LLC, and senior managing partner of Randall & Associates, LLC. In 2006, Randall was diagnosed with leukemia, and after aggressive rounds of chemo and radiation therapy, his doctors gave up and in February 2007 told him to go home and get his affairs in order. But Randall wasn't having it. With a positive attitude, his faith, and alternative treatment, he's beating the odds. On his newly released single entitled Be Free, Randall speaks about his mental state and his struggle with bipolar disorder. I'm Johnny O. Henson, Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, Dr. Tracy Randall, PhD, gospel recording artist, singer, songwriter, and producer, and cancer survivor, In Black America.
You got me here for a reason. It's in your plans.
I believe.
Follow your
diagnosed with acute, and I have some great news for you, acute lymphocytic leukemia. And 2007, February 2007, they gave me 3 to 6 months to live. And in 2013, I went into remission. But as you know, well, you may not know, they give you a 5-year time span before you can say that, hey, it's never coming back. Although they have a higher rate that it won't come back. But in June of 2015, I had ringing in my ears, and I just assumed that it was like a cold or something, because I travel so much. And then the ringing would not leave. It was like consistent, like really heavy in my head. And I said, well, no, I need to go to the ER. By the time I got into the ER, they immediately put me into blood transfusions and all these other things. My white blood cell count was only 6.
Whoa.
And in any living being, it should be no more than 200.
As a cancer survivor, Dr. Tracy Randall has a renewed faith. His plea to God, not to heal his body, but to give him the courage and strength to endure the depression he continues to plague him. Born and raised in Lake Charles, Louisiana, Randall has 9 other brothers and sisters. He grew up listening to Stevie Wonder, Gladys Knight, Mahalia Jackson, and Donny Hathaway. As a teenager, he was in various singing groups, but eventually he was always kicked out. However, music did help him stay out of trouble. When he graduated high school at the age of 16, he intended to pursue an engineering degree, but that didn't work out the way he had planned. So he changed his major to business and graduated in 3 years. He then went on to earn a PhD and law degree all at the same time. In 1999, he started Lavish Records. Randall has done a lot of work behind the scenes in the music industry before stepping out to do his own thing. Recently, Randall has released his third CD entitled No Judgment.
Oh, man, I'm the 8th child of 10, so I learned how to eat fast and hit hard. And, you know, being a 70s baby, of course, dealing with what's going on today, you know, the race relations, the relationships of black and white, and also within our own ethnicity, lighter skin versus brown skin versus dark skin. So it's still transpiring. So that's what it was like growing up.
I was reading that you was trying to run away from your gift.
Yeah, man, I never thought of myself as a singer. I've always known to be a songwriter, and that's where my gift stood. And I wanted to be an electrical engineer, but the tables were turned. I had taken a course called thermodynamics, and the professor put an A, meaning angstrom, and then the formula was from the left of the board to the right of the board. Mm-hmm. And tears fell down my face, and I changed my major to business.
And what made you go on to obtain a law degree?
Well, I never wanted to be an attorney. What happened is I finished undergrad. I was only 19 years old.
Right.
And no one was going to give me a job. So the only thing I could do, I took the LSAT immediately and did the GMAT. And I entered a PhD, JD PhD program at UCLA. So that was the main reason as to why I became an attorney. But hindsight is 2020. I had signed with Def Jam Records, and Def Jam, well, Island, mm-hmm. had merged with Universal. And I had written all of these songs, and they were trying to retain publishing, which I didn't have a co-publishing agreement. And then they were trying to release me from the agreement, and they still owed me. So it was great that I was an attorney, so I was able to negotiate both the settlement and my publishing rights and all those other great things. And so now I'm looking, well, I've been the fighter for the underdog because I've been there where they are, where, you know, what they're going through. So it actually worked for the better.
Was there any challenges you faced being so young while you were an undergrad?
You know, there were a lot of challenges. One, I couldn't go places that 18-year-olds could go. And I ran track, so my mom would have to sign a release almost every time we traveled. And I guess the other students didn't realize it, but my coach realized it. And then when they started seeing things, like, oh, this guy can't be our age. And then, you know, eventually a lot of them became big brothers and big sisters to me. So I would say I was able to overcome the challenges and the fact that I was kind of street smart along with book sense, so it actually mm-hmm. helped me.
In 2006, you were hit with some health challenges. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I was diagnosed with acute, and I have some great news for you, acute lymphocytic leukemia. And 2007, February of 2007, they gave me 3 to 6 months to live. And in 2013, I went into remission. But as you know, well, you may not know, they give you a 5-year time span before you can say that, hey, it's never coming back. Although they have a higher rate that it won't come back. But in June of 2015, I had a ringing in my ears, and I just assumed that it was like a cold or something because I travel so much. And then the ringing would not leave. It was like consistent, like really heavy in my head. And I said, well, no, I need to go to the ER. By the time I got into the ER, they immediately put me into blood transfusions and all these other things. My white blood cell count was only 6. And in any living being, it should be no more than 200. And, you know, I had tumors in my head, tumors in my lungs still. They removed one in my head through my nasal cavity, and still the others are in my lungs. But 3 weeks ago, well, let's back up. I opted out of chemo this time, and I started doing this treatment called blood oxygenation and immune therapy and cryogenic freezing, a lot of things that were less intrusive to the body. And 3 weeks ago, I got my NED report, no existence of the disease. So I no longer take the nuclear pill. Yeah, I run probably 18 miles a week. I have really changed my mental state and mental whatever it was. I no longer thought about the cancer. I thought about life. So it was a blessing to see that I was able to see beyond the illness and see the true meaning of life. And, you know, a lot of times I still have a fever. There's still a lot of things going on, but hopefully I'll stay healthy for 5 years, and we'll be talking 5 years from now about
that.
You know, what happened here.
So during that process and continuing on, I assume that you have to have a somewhat of a regimented schedule?
Yes. What transpired with me, they had placed me on steroids, and I had always been 150 pounds, except for when I was first diagnosed, I had dropped down to 110 pounds, and I'm 6 feet tall. So the second go-round, they started putting me on steroids. And so I had blown up to 210 pounds, and I became depressed. I mean, when I say really depressed, I couldn't get out of bed. But thinking about the depression, I was like, you know, this used to happen to me all the time. Even growing up, I would isolate myself, and then I would come out the room a couple of days later, and I'm just excited about the world and about life. And so I went to see a therapist and of course, a psychiatrist, and they diagnosed me with bipolar. So dealing with the cancer, dealing with the bipolar was a task because the bipolar disease, to me, was worse than the cancer, because I knew that Tuesday and Thursday I was going to treatment. With the bipolar, I never knew when I was going to be depressed or when I was going to be bouncing off the walls buying everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a difficult balance, but the regimen went for me. I started walking probably 2 miles a day. I started doing that. And then I started only walking on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. What I would do, I would jog 1 mile and walk 2 miles on each occasion. And then eventually I would push myself to jogging to walking to, and I did that for a couple of months. And I was dropping a pound a week, and I was feeling good. I loved the way I was looking, so I you know, started moving around. People started seeing me. And then eventually, where I am now, I jog 6 miles 3 times a day. I'm 160 pounds. I'm back in a 34 waist. And people are like, what happened? You know, so yeah. So that's the regimen. I never ate red meat or pork.
Okay.
But my calorie count, I only do 2,000 calories a day. So that's my regimen.
Tell us about your new CD.
Oh, man. No Judgment. No Judgment came from just how religious people as a whole, I'm not just saying Christian, you know, Catholic, Islam, there's this sort of judgment that happens, not, it's almost naturally because of the way they were programmed, if I could use that word. And what No Judgment is about is I kept it honest. I kept it real about, you know, the drinking, the use of drugs, the womanizing, you know, just all of that stuff. So I just laid it all on the table, and it was an honest account of my life. And I just want people to stop looking at the surface of someone and, you know, give somebody a chance, you know, because you never know. You're probably the only God someone will ever see during that time span. And if you're mean and judgmental and angry and bitter and jaded, they're not going to want no God, because it's like, I don't want to know that God that you're serving, you know. So that's what No Judgment is about.
And tell us about that first single off of it.
Well, Be Free And that record is probably the best song that I've sang, and the best lyric and production I'd ever done in a while. I mean, if you could tell, the production on this is so different, and the vocals on this one is so different, because I actually went and got a vocal coach and learned piano. I just, you know, I did a lot of things that were different because I've taken the art serious. But Be Free, it's about the depression of me hearing the voices and telling me, you know, that you don't know God, he doesn't love you, questioning why I'm going through certain things and others aren't, and they're out there committing crimes every day. But I'm finally free from those type of thoughts, the thought process. And, you know, mental illness is a huge thing within the Black community, and it's thought of as you're crazy, you know. So I wanted to dispel that stigma and be the first person to say that I am suffering from mental illness, but I'm still okay and I'm taking medication, and you can still live a fruitful life. You have to go through therapy. You have to find those triggers in your life that will make you be angry and interact in a certain way. And so that's what Be Free is about.
Early morning, pain keeps me in the bed. I can barely move. Voice is telling me I should be dead. I focus on you. Part of me gave up, part of me's too strong. I know I can do this. In my mind there's doubt, asking myself how will I get through?
I wanna be free
from this hurting pain, this hurting pain. This hurting pain.
I wanna be free
from this hurting pain. This hurting pain. This hurting pain. Drowning in sorrow keeps bringing me down. Lord, help me turn this around.
I wanna be free
from this hurting pain. This hurting pain. This hurting pain. They got me on this medication, trying to heal my every wound. It's taboo to talk about depression, so Lord, I talk to you. Part of me gave up, part of me's too strong. I know I can do this. In my mind there's doubt, asking myself how.
Why gospel music as an art form for you over secular music?
Well, me personally, I don't think there's a difference. But the thing is, except for all the cussing and carrying on, there's a lot of records that really minister to people about day-to-day life, and the music moves them, especially when they're going through a heartbreak or a hard time. You know, they hear that love song about, you know, encouragement and all those other things. With me, I would probably consider myself an inspirational, tell the good news kind of guy, because my sole purpose is not to save anyone, because that's God's job. My sole purpose is to show people who I am, to tell my testimony, and to encourage them, not to frighten them into God. And so that's my approach to gospel music, to inspirational music. So I guess the real reason I chose gospel music, inspirational music, is because I wanted to inspire, to motivate, to share good news, to share that there is promise in God and there is nothing that surprises him.
When did you come up with the concept for Original Man Entertainment?
Well, a long time ago, I'm a huge history guy. I had read a book, The Invisible Man, and a few others. And they talked about the original man being the original man as far as African people, my people. And that's where Original Man came from. My company cannot be duplicated. What we offer is different than most management companies or entertainment companies. And we really care about the talent that we represent, about the people that we come in contact with. Every email I receive, even if I don't know the person, I still respond to them. If I receive tapes, whatever it is, and we never requested it, we respond to it, because I feel that the Original Man comes from an original heart, a caring heart. The Original Man, everyone else derives from us. So therefore, we have to be a depiction of what originality is. And I think that we're a kind people. I think that we're a loving people. So that's where Original Man came from.
Is it difficult to explain to some of your clients that are two distinct functions in the entertainment business? There's the show, and then there's the business. Like show business.
Well, the thing is, even, you know, even if they have a CPA or whatever, financial advisor, we give our clients books, and in our agreement, there's a mandatory financial courses. There's a mandatory psychologist you must see. Because you would be surprised at the things that a lot of these kids go through, not only internally, but through the people, the family, and all these other things, especially when they go from being impoverished to being millionaires overnight. So that in itself can be very difficult. And trust me, it can be, because I was young and it happened for me and I went buck wild. And, you know, and so I guess living through it, I'm able to kind of motivate them into a different path.
How do you divide up your day? You said you're teaching law at Columbia, but you got all these other titles.
You know, I have an amazing staff. Okay. And I tell you, I've had people that's been with me for 17, sometimes 20 years. And that's how I manage. And also, I'm a stickler for time. My day, actually my life, I try to plan it out, sketch it out for the next 3 years, 4 years, because I base it upon the Olympics. And, you know, seeking new talent. I know that we're going to have, through the summertime, March through the summer, you know, we are in the drafts, and then we're negotiating agreements. And hopefully those people play during the preseason so that the contract would. So during that time span, I'm working. Also, I've really pulled back. I no longer do the 90-hour weeks. I actually work probably 10 hours a week now. I mean, literally 10 hours a week. I no longer push the envelope. I no longer take things home. My oldest son just graduated from LSU. He's in a graduate program at Princeton. My daughter, she's a sophomore at Spelman. No, she's a junior now. Yeah, a junior at Spelman. And my youngest is 13. And I've had some regrets, because my oldest and I, we're very close, but we don't know one another sometimes, you know?
Right.
So I'm never going to do that again. I'm like backtracking. So as a parent, that's a very difficult pill to swallow, and an honest pill to swallow. And I'm learning. You know, I'm learning to stop doing certain things. And probably the only reason why I'm teaching is so that I don't feel bored or antiquated or something like that. But, so that's it.
When you look at the state of affairs here in America, does it frighten you a bit? And have you had conversations, particularly with your 13-year-old, about some of the things that are happening, some of the things he may see on television?
Well, the thing about it, when the initial transition of Trump into the White House, and they were talking about sending or deporting certain individuals, race of people, back to their home country. And my 13-year-old son, his name is Adrian, but we call him Cheese. You know, he came home in tears because, you know, he has a lot of friends who are in high school with him, which are not immigrants, but he, in his mind, he knew that they were Latina or Latino, and that's all. And that's all he could. You know, he didn't know the difference with regards to immigration. So I had to sit down and really explain things to him, because he was actually afraid that his classmates were going to be deported. The issue now for us is the police brutality. That is the biggest issue in our household. When you're having to tell your son, if you're ever stopped by the police, put your hands on the steering wheel. Do not move. If they ask you for something, tell them to get it. And, you know, things of that nature. And it's paralyzing because you're always thinking, you know, man, I hope Jalen doesn't get into anything, or I hope and pray that, you know, no one messes with cheese, you know, just all sorts of things. And even with my daughter, you know, there have been debts that we cannot explain for African-American women or black women. Mm-hmm. And so in the midst of that, we don't want to frighten our children, but we want to teach them to be able to make the right choices. And the key word is, when they say you have the right to remain silent, you use that silence as your tool. Do not, I mean, there's no need for you to try to explain all this other stuff, because they your trial is not there on the street. You go through the process and daddy will make sure the rest is taken care of. But don't try to disrupt the situation. Don't be so passive, but the key to it is getting through the process so that you can see a judge.
Recording artist and cancer survivor, Dr. Tracy Randall. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions as to future In Black America programs, email us at inblackamerica@kut.org. Also, let us know what radio station you heard us over. Remember to like us on Facebook and to follow us on Twitter. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or of the University of Texas at Austin. You can hear previous programs online at KUT.org. Until we have the opportunity again for technical producer David Alvarez, I'm Johnny O'Hanson Jr. Thank you for joining us today. Please join us again next week.
CD copies of this program are available and may be purchased by writing In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 1 University Station, Austin, Texas, 78712. That's In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 1 University Station, Austin, Texas, 78712. This has been a production of KUT Radio.